My name's Sandy, and I'm an addict. Sorry, forgot for a minute. This topic, when they asked me to chair or to speak at one of these workshops, and she told me what the topic was, of course I was in. This is my topic of expertise. You can be sick and be clean. I know this for a fact because I did it for some years. My secrets almost took me back out with 16 years clean. Makes me a little emotional still. My clean date is July 16th, 1998. And the only thing that I did right for some of those years was not pick up. And the reason is because I had secrets. And I knew that exposing my secrets meant that I would have to do the work. And I didn't want to do the work. Not because I was afraid of the work, but I was afraid to change my life again. The first year I was clean, I was in drug court. Well, I was in drug court for a long time. Like 3.5 years. But the last year of drug court, when I was actually clean, I was afraid that that the meetings weren't really anonymous, that someone was reporting to the judge. I didn't want to leave the relationship I was in, and my boyfriend was still using. And that's a, you know, it's kind of a rule. So me and my friend that was in drug court, we sponsored each other. It's frowned upon. Because I didn't want to get a real sponsor because I didn't want to do the work. I didn't want to be honest. And I wasn't staying. I was just doing drug court, and then I was going about my life. So I couldn't be honest in group. I couldn't be honest in IOP. I couldn't be honest with my probation officer. I couldn't be honest with my home group members. And I only vaguely understood what home group meant. I wasn't sharing. I wasn't growing, but I wasn't using. I wasn't using because I had to do 6 UAs a week. But I was on like triple, quadruple, secret, zero tolerance, like negative 20s tolerance. Sorry, I have some notes because I get nervous and I forget to tell you guys important things that I want you to know. So my boyfriend that I was using with, we got arrested together on July 16th, 1998. And that was the day that I decided that I didn't want to use anymore. And he said, same, only he didn't really mean it. So when I got out of jail, I had to report. I was doing my thing, and he was still using. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just, you know, white-knuckle it through this year, and then we'll go back to the life we were living. The only reason I signed up for drug court in the first place is so I could get out of jail, like the 3 years that, you know. I didn't really want it. At that time, but this time I did. And they almost didn't give me that chance. They almost didn't take me back into the program and let me finish. So that was pretty painful. And then I was scared, you know. It was, I remember the last meeting I went to that I had to get my slip signed. And I was scared. I was like, I knew I wasn't going to come back. There was no reason for me to come back if I didn't have to have my slip signed. And I kind of wanted to come back. I was like, wow. I'd made friends, and they were doing this thing, and I was lying about doing this thing. Oh, me and my sponsor met this weekend. Yeah, because we were living in a trailer in our mom's front yard, clean. That's, my life wasn't getting better, and I was just covering it up with lies. So I did keep going, though. I decided, okay, well, I'm just going to see. Maybe I can do this. And the second year of my recovery, my boyfriend got arrested again and said he was going to get clean. He was going to do recovery with me. And I was super happy until he got out. And then I wasn't happier. The relationship wasn't making me happy. I had not worked the steps. Drug court required us to do like 1 through 3, which I did bullshit with my friend. And they never looked at anything. We just said, yep, did it. And I decided to get a sponsor that wasn't my friend. And so I asked a lady who, when they said, you know, find someone who has what you want, and I didn't really understand that. But she had a really cool car, and her husband owned a business, and she had great hair, and so I wanted her to be my sponsor. And she said, I'll be your temporary sponsor. I was like, well, that's some bullshit. But it was okay, because then I didn't really have to commit to her either. And so I found that I really liked events and conventions and the fellowship after the meetings, but I still wasn't doing the work. She nominated me to be the GSR of my home group with, like, you know, 1 year clean, and I did not know what that meant either, but I did it because she made me, and then I just quit talking to her. Like, I just went to a new home group, and I mean, I did not understand what was going on in my life. So I kind of started to get it a little more. I got a real sponsor. So my third year clean, now 3 years in, y'all, I'm still telling lies. I'm still keeping secrets, and my recovery is not going anywhere, and I'm not sure why that's going to make me cry, but I'm still regretful of the time I wasted, you know, and the lies that I told. So I got a new sponsor, and she was amazing, and I could be honest with her. And I had sponsee sisters, and we had a really good little sponsorship family, and it felt good. And for the first time, I started to work steps. In 98, the step working guide came out, and we were working it together, and it was like my first little, like, really happy recovery experiences. I got a sponsee. I got my first sponsee for like 3 weeks, and then she bought some pills from the neighbor, and I told her she had to change her clean date, and she never talked to me again. I don't think I ever saw her again. So, and I was still with that boyfriend, and he didn't have a sponsor, wasn't working the steps, and I was pretending like that didn't affect my life by saying, well, I'm not working his recovery for him. But he wasn't doing anything, you know. And it was kind of affecting my recovery. Well, it was really affecting my recovery. But I was just doing my thing. And so year 5, I decided, since things were so painful and I was so unhappy, that I would marry him. And... because that would make it better. If you've ever heard my story, there's a little bit of a theme for me in marriage. But so I became less involved in Narcotics Anonymous then. I had blinders on to the things that were going on. I wasn't really sure that he was even clean all the time. I knew the guys that he worked with. He was a roofer. I knew that they weren't clean. But he just got mad if I ever asked about it. So I just started taking baby steps backwards, because I didn't want anybody to see my truth again. This is a very emotional topic. So I was doing well with my sponsor, my steps, being involved, doing things. Still not happy at home, but so we make it to year 12, and my sponsor relapsed. And it was a perfect time not to get a new one. So I did not replace her. And nobody questioned me about it. And I just kind of could slip away a little bit more and a little bit more. And then in my year 13, I had an opportunity. I forgot to tell you, I got clean in Washington State, not from Texas originally. But in my 13th year clean, I had the opportunity to take a job in Corpus Christi, Texas. So me and my husband, he was like, yeah, let's move. And so we went to Corpus Christi, and I stopped everything. I never went to a meeting there. I never found another sponsor. I never told coworkers, people I met. I never told anybody that I was in recovery, that I was. They knew I didn't go out drinking with everybody after work, but nobody really questioned why that was. It's like, oh, I have to pick my dogs up at daycare, you know, which was a legitimate thing, but nobody knew I was an addict. My secrets were intentional. And my husband was cheating. I'm pretty sure he'd always been cheating, but I chose not to look at it. And I thought, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter anymore. I'm never going to be happy. You know, this maybe isn't the life for me. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I don't, you know, it was a really, really dark time in my life. And we lived there for almost 3 years. He still lives there. So I celebrated 16, well, didn't celebrate. I hit 16 years clean, and we had been together for 18 years. And I thought, if 18 years together didn't matter, why does 16 years clean matter? It's all just numbers, and none of it is important. If the commitment I made to him isn't worth anything, then the commitment I made to Narcotics Anonymous doesn't matter either. So I kind of was keeping secrets from myself at that time. Like, I was lying to myself, y'all. I mean, it was like, I can remember every morning driving to work and praying with tears that God would give me the answer to, what do I need to do? Why is my life such a mess? And every day I had this overwhelming, it's funny to me now, but I had this overwhelming voice that I heard say that this relationship is not for you. You need to get your shit together and get back to Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, and every day I was like, God, I wish you would just answer me, because I know this isn't what you're telling me. So anyway, I decided that I was just going to go back out. I was going to go with the guys after work on Friday. I was going to, I might as well have fun, you know. Nobody here knows my past. Nobody knows what I've been through. There's something that I was reading when I was looking for my inspiration for this. In recovery and relapse, it says, another type of relapse happens when being clean is not the top priority. Staying clean must always come first. At times, we all experience difficulty in our recovery. Emotional lapses result when we don't practice what we have learned. Those who make it through these times show a courage not their own. After coming through one of these periods, we can readily agree that it is always darkest before the dawn. Once we get through a difficult time, we are given a tool of recovery that we can use again and again. I love that. I love, yeah, me too. this was probably the darkest time of my entire life, and I was 16 years clean. When I was using, there was a couple times I had suicidal thoughts, just like, you know, many of us do, and a couple times I, like, acted out, but it was more for attention than wanting to die. Like, I wanted to hurt him or make him feel bad, so I would wait till he was, oh, is that his car? Okay, now, you know, whatever I was setting it up to look like, you know. But with 16 years clean, I actually contemplated taking my own life because it was so painful to be clean and not be in the program. Can't read my notes. It wasn't a cry for attention this time. It was me making a decision. I knew I needed to make a decision. And once again, I didn't want to. Oh, now June wants to come to me. She's a heartbreaker. I needed to make a decision, and I didn't want to make the hard decision again. I felt like I'd always been making the hard decisions, and it was never turning out. And I wasn't looking at the fact that I wasn't fulfilling my obligations to the decision. So I was going to go with the guys out drinking Friday after work, even told them, hey, guess what? I'm going to go this time. And they're like, what? And I was scared. And I was like, okay, are you really making this decision? Because, you know, 16 years, a lot of time. And I thought, maybe I should just go to a meeting and just see. Like, and so I looked it up, and I I didn't even know where they were because I hadn't even looked for one. And I drove over there, and I was in the parking lot at this church, and I saw my people. They looked just like you guys. And I was like, my people. And I felt that warm, fuzzy feeling, and they all went inside, and I started my engine and went home, and I didn't go in. And then, but I didn't go drinking Friday night. So the next week, I was like, okay, I'm going to go back one more time to this meeting, and I'm going to go in. And so again, I went, I watched them, they went inside, and I went home. But I didn't go drinking. And then the third week, I went inside. And they welcomed me, and they said the same things, and they gave me hugs, and they asked, you know, where are you from? What, you know, and I felt completely at home, and I didn't share. I sat there and cried, and then I got in my car and I went home, and I called my son who is an adult and lived in Washington, and I said, I have to leave here. I have to come home. This isn't the place for me, and this isn't, I don't need to stay in this marriage just because I spent a lot of time making this mistake doesn't mean I have to live this mistake. And he said, okay, I'll fly down next week and we'll drive home, you know. So I put everything I could in the back of my car. Well, it was an SUV, it was a big one, but I had two dogs, shoved them in there, literally. I couldn't even see them. And for 3 days, it's like, you guys back there? We drove back, and I still remember how that feels. So I was moving again. I was getting divorced again. This wasn't the first or second or third time. I got married the first time when I was 16 to the guy that sold me acid at the gas station. So I had a really good history of making great romantic choices. what could go wrong? I was going to restart my recovery all over again. And I really felt like I never started it to begin with. You know, 16 years, and I was so ashamed. I had so many secrets. Okay, what does my note say? So spiritual health checks. This is one of the most important things I learned is I got back into the literature. I was like, okay, when I got out of jail the last time, I read this book like 700 times the first night, I swear. And I was like, how did they know? You know? And so I got back into the literature, and I didn't have any of my literature. I had to buy all new books, and that made me sad. I was like, why am I here, you know? But spiritual health became my number one focus for my new recovery. Like, I know that if I'm not spiritually fit, then things really go off the rails for me really quickly. Brandon said something last night. I made a little note here. Did you guys see Brandon last night? Oh my goodness. Like, he's my new favorite person. But after my sponsor. She's right over there. He said something last night. When addicts are active in the program, the derelict can become the college graduate and have a career and more. But if you're just staying clean, I don't know. And that was me. Like, way back before I moved to Corpus, I wanted a career, and I started going to college. I had a whole shitload of felonies, and I wasn't sure that it was ever going to go anywhere, but I started the path to this, and my husband didn't support me. He thought it was stupid, and I was wasting my time, and I was, you know, not working my program, keeping my secrets, and it didn't go anywhere, and it was kind of a waste of my time. And when I got refocused on my recovery and my spiritual growth and health, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to see what I can do about this. And I got my record cleaned up, and I went back to college, and I have a career. And I can be proud of those things. For a while, I felt like I had to downplay my blessings and my accomplishments, like it was boastful or something. And I'm here to tell you that this girl had 13 felony convictions at one time, and now I have none. I have a master's degree. I work for a global automotive manufacturer, and it's doable. You can do whatever you want to do, but not if I. It's hard not to crosstalk. I want to tell you guys, you can do this, but because I believe it, you know, I believe it because I did it. So. And even now, you know, we moved to Texas, my husband and I, different husband. This is the right husband. I've made much better choices since that time. He is so much my better half, and he, supports me in everything. And he's always telling me that I can do anything I want to do. Sorry. So we moved here, and we got connected to the community, the recovery community here right away, and I got involved right away, and I needed to get a new sponsor, of course, again. And I kind of put it off a little bit, and you know what? It, like, was like I woke up every morning going, don't start your shit again. You know, you've got to get a new sponsor. You got to start doing this. And so I did. And it's not, she's not the sponsor I have now, because what's important to me now is that I get my cup filled every day, that I have someone I can be 100% honest with, someone I can call and tell her, I'm about to stab this bitch in the neck. And she's like, okay, well, let's just think about what we could do besides stabbing people. Like, okay, you know, fine, we'll try it your way. I don't have any secrets from her. If there's something that she doesn't know about me, it's just because it hasn't come up yet. There's nothing I wouldn't tell her. There's probably some things I don't want to have to tell her, but I will, you know. We haven't made it all the way through the steps. We've put in the hours, but we just haven't made it all the way through. And I've never been more excited to start over on step one. I feel like a newcomer. And I have 24 years of abstinence, but not recovery. And I feel these last few years like I should have felt the first few years. And that's why I know I'm in the right place. I'm with the right people. My sponsee sisters are amazing. And we're like, I want my sponsees to support each other and be there for each other. But it's been a really long time since I've had that. And I feel so loved and so supported all the time. I made a note on my little piece of paper here that says page 79, and I don't know what's on page 79. It's a surprise to all of us. That's where it says we have never seen a person who lives the Narcotics Anonymous program relapse. And that's the difference, you know, those 3 weeks when I was driving away from the meeting and planning to go out drinking with the guys from work, I was not working with program and I was bound to relapse. It was inevitable. The decision had been made. But my higher power obviously was not done with me yet. I feel like I've been talking for 3 hours.
You have 7 minutes. Oh, and 20
Lord.
Seconds.
Okay. I don't think her phone works right, but
now it's 10 seconds.
I will say this. If you don't have a sponsor that you think you can call for anything and tell anything to, then you might need a new sponsor. If you're not the type of sponsor your sponsees can call and tell you anything, maybe you need to look at that too. I try to be the best example for my sponsees that I possibly can be. I know I can't survive keeping secrets again, and I don't ever want to live my life like that again. Ever. I mean, man. And I know that if I keep doing the work I'm doing now, I'm involved. I'm involved with my group. I'm involved at area. I try to be involved in H&I as much as possible. It seems like it's hard sometimes. I have a crazy schedule, but I have about 400 sponsees or seven, but and it takes a lot of time. You know, my husband's in recovery for real. he actually has a sponsor and talks to him like an annoying amount of time. My sponsor has a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. Every day is like filled with spiritual thoughts. I try to fill my head with spiritual thoughts that fill me with hope. And, you know, I don't feel like I can't even say that. That's not the truth. I do feel like I wasted some of the years of my abstinence. I'm not even going to say it was recovery. And for that, I am often remorseful. But I don't know that I would appreciate all the blessings and the gifts that I have now as much if I hadn't have fucked up those first years as badly as I did. So I'm just going to be thankful that I never picked up and that I get another chance. Is that 7 minutes?
You got 4 minutes.
Oh, come on.
25 seconds.
Does anybody know a joke? So the page that they gave us is page 306 in Life on Life's, it's the Life on Life's Terms story section. And it said, when I read it, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. It says, I could not believe I was doing this type of behavior with 5 years clean, or 16. I had to blame it on I had nothing to blame it on, no excuses to give. I wasn't loaded or young and inexperienced. I was responsible, and with that awareness, I felt dirty and hopeless. I come to understand fully the phrase, you're only as sick as your secrets. And that's like, yeah. that's my life, you know, in a nutshell. And I'm just going to be super grateful for that. I'm going to be grateful that that I felt that pain, because I don't ever want it again.
I'm Agnew Mike. Got me all emotional, Sandy. Golly. But that's what happens when the awakening of the spirit, surgery of the spirit, whatever we want to call it, that happens in Narcotics Anonymous, right? And so the best thing about it is I get to participate in it. You know, I run with people that make membership look very attractive. Right? My sponsor makes membership look very attractive. The people that I associate with make membership look very attractive, right? And they're just like you guys. If you're here, you probably make recovery at your home group look very attractive, right? And so, when I was given the topic, when they said 306, I was like, oh, that's the personal fucking stories, right? And so I go back there, and I'll be honest with you, I ain't ever read none of the personal stories. I did in the fifth edition, right? But the new one, I haven't, you know? So I go back there, and it's 306, and then it's talking about we're as sick as our secrets, right? And when I think of secrets, I think of defects, right? And of course, I got a sponsor, I got a home group, and my home, I always promote my home group, so, you know, qualify myself. So my home group is a hope group of Narcotics Anonymous. We meet every day at noon and 8 o'clock. We're 2425 South 7th Street, Abilene, Texas. If you're ever in West Texas or Abilene, give us a call. Look us up. Come mess with us. Where recovery happens, right? We're a literature-based home group, and the people there feed my spirit, right? And so when I think of the personal stories, the only thing I've ever really read, because see, my sponsor says some slick ass shit like, and he told, this is exactly what he told me. He's all, Mike, what's worse than a using addict? You know, and he's all, I was like, well, fuck, I don't know. You know, he's all, an addict in the program with no step work under their belt, right? And I'm like, man, where'd he get that fly ass shit? You know, fucking poet, right? And so on 211, it says, today I believe that a person who is clean and has not worked the steps can possibly be more dangerous than someone using, right? And so when I think of these secrets, I think of defects, right? And I think of the fourth step and the fifth step, right? But first of all, I got to get in the first step. And let's back it up. She talked about abstinence. Do I got any abstinence going on? Do I got a sponsor? Do I got some literature? You know, am I willing to participate in this process, right? And so I get the ball rolling, right? We get the spiritual momentum. You know, I don't know about you, but like every step, I got the little spiritual principle, you know. Like step four says, all the principles from step one through three, willingness, honesty, courage, faith, and trust, right? And so then I remember like, I got to remember like abstinence or being clean as an asset, you know. If I want to save this abstinence, I need something around it, right? I need to trust one man with the whole man, you know. And of course, I get here, and I had a bunch of secrets, right? But she hit on it. Like, the secrets before I got here are bad, but the ones I accumulate since getting here are even worse. Right, because I start like I'm cold. I don't know about you. I'm cold. Yeah, I had to put this on my head. I double shirted earlier, and I was just like, man, they ain't selling no beanies, no hoodies up in this piece. You know, I walked over to merchandise. There ain't nothing going on over there, right? And so I got to get with the sponsor. I got to get with the man, right? I got to trust this man. You know, and so getting here, and I always share, when I walked into the Hope Group, and I all my using was in Los Angeles, right? And I used for 18 months in Abilene, Texas. But I survived in Los Angeles for 29 years, right? And I always tell people I survived there. I didn't fucking live in L.A. I fucking survived. I was on parole. You're looking at a parolee gang member fucking heroin addict, you know, up until I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I always tell people I've lived in Abilene, Texas. I don't know no other life than Abilene, Texas and Narcotics Anonymous, right? I had to get what was going on in here, man. And so I remember getting here and not trusting nobody, right? I was like, man, and they're like, man, you better tell on someone. You know, they say the fly little cliche. You better tell on somebody and it better be yourself, you know? And I'm like, man, these guys are a bunch of snitches up in here. I knew it, you know? And see, I had some secrets when I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I say it now because it ain't a secret no more, but you guys were harboring a fugitive when I got it. That's why I got, you know, there was nowhere else to go. You know, that's how I ended up in Texas. I was on the damn run. You know, and so I get clean and I'm like, man, I can't trust these guys, man. And then the disease is insidious, man. I don't know about you, but the disease wants me dead, but it'll settle for me getting high. You know, I always got to remember that. I got a disease that tells me I don't got a disease. She just shared about it, right? I got a disease that tells me not to hang out with you. I got a disease trying to separate me from the lifeboat, right? In the sea, it calls you guys the lifeboat in the sea of desperation. She just talked about the ultimate, the most powerful vehicle. She didn't even go in the meeting, and it was already touching her spirit, right? And so the moment I walk in, I'm just like, I can't, man, I don't know if I can trust these people, man. You know, the disease was like, man, buddy, look, it went down to race, color, and substance even, right? At first, it was like, man, a bunch of white dudes and black dudes up in here, man. I can't fuck with them, you know? I can't tell them how I really feel, right? Because they used to say that to you. Can you tell me how you really feel, Mike? Can you tell me how you really feel, right? And so then it broke it down to substance even, right? Because in Abilene, Texas at that time, they didn't have no Mexican marching band powder, right? They didn't have no heroin. You know, there was a bunch of tweakers and bass heads, right? My mind's all like, these tweakers and bass heads can't help you, you know? And so I start this process, man, and I start going along to get along, you know, and I start on the first step, right? And see, of course, my sponsor at that time, he had me start at the symbol and then work our way. And I'm like, you know, rebellion. Rebellion can produce indifference and intolerance, right? And the whole time I'm like, well, why not I on step one? Everyone else seems to be on some step work up in this piece, but not, you know, not Mike. Why ain't I on step one? He's like, you are on step one, you know? He used to tell me some fly stuff when I first got here, and it hurt my feelings, man. Right? But of course, I wouldn't tell him that it hurt my feelings. You know, then, and with that right there, I'm stuffing some more secrets. You know? And so anyways, we get on this first step, finally, after, the fucking symbol introduction, chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, right? Finally, chapter four, man. Right? And so, before we even get to step one, he tells me, man, you're gonna read how it works, but I want you to stop at step one. I was like, why? And he said, I want you to find the questions up in there, right? And I'm like, what question? Like, what the hell? So, and there's questions before you even get to step one right here, man. And they're highlighted right here. And it asks, are you sure you want to stop using? Right? Am I chipping on the weekend? Am I keeping secrets, right? Am I still dabbling? You know, am I a weekend warrior? You know, and then it says, do we understand that we never had real control over drugs? Because we're about to get into step one. Control's a, you know, we're about to hit the first step, right? Do you recognize that in the long run, we didn't use drugs, they used us, right? I thought I came in here like, you know, we come in here, we're telling all these stories, man. I was a baller, shot caller, you know, really, you know, I was hot shit on a platter, you know. No, I was a fucking cold turd on a fucking styrofoam plate by the time I came to Narcotics Anonymous, right? But I have these ideas that who I think I am, right? Or who I thought I was, and it was far from that. I wasn't that person. It was the 90s. It was the early 90s when that stopped. You know, and we're talking about like 2004 now, right? And so I said, did jails and institutions take over the management of our lives at different times? Did it? Yeah, hell yeah, it did. Do we fully accept the fact that our every attempt to stop using or to control our using failed? I could see every time, right, I got out. You know how we are, man. Oh, it's going to be different this time. Right? I'm only going to go to the liquor store and roll a little something. Every time I'd end up at the spot, right? Do we know that our addiction changed us into someone we didn't want to be? Dishonest, deceitful, self-willed people at odds with ourselves and our fellow man, right? And that question, I had a hard time getting with that, man, because I'm telling you, I had a lot of these secrets, man. You know, do we really believe that we have failed as drug users? Do I really believe that? Did I, you know, and those are the questions before the first step, right? And so then I'm over here and I'm doubting the process, and I'm just like, well, I've tried this before. I dabbled with this. See, my dad got clean in East LA. He passed with 25 years clean, man. And every time I'd get out, he tried to tote me to these little meetings and stuff, man. You know, but I wasn't trying to ease my pain. I was trying to ease my old man's pain, man, you know, at that time. Until one day, my sponsor, and Brandon hit on it, but there's two sentences like that. I was looking for this. There's got to be a loophole in this program. This program ain't that powerful. You guys are full of shit, man. Someone in here, you know, someone needs to show me, like, how. Look, this is what I wanted, man. I wanted to get on methadone. I wanted housing. I wanted food stamps. I wanted Medicaid to get on the methadone to pay for it. Right? Somehow, someone, that's all I wanted when I got here. And I wanted the warrants to go away. Right? That's what I wanted, right? And so then I knew someone was going to show me the loophole, right? Someone's got to show me how to use like a gentleman in here, right? There's surely a class in here that they're going to show me how to management or moderation, you know, something, you know. And so on page 79, it says, we have never seen a person who lives the Narcotics Anonymous program relapse, right? Talking about lives. Right? And then on page 91, it says, in our experience, no addict who has completely surrendered to this program has ever failed to find recovery. So there was two fears when I got here, man. You know? One was, what if this don't work? I've read these steps off the wall, you know, I've read them, like, what if this don't work, right? Then what? You know, do we have a little microwavable? Do we have some recovery that's microwavable in here where I don't have to work so hard for it, you know? Do we have a fast track? Maybe, you know, do we have something, you know, something for the hardcore. Really, it was just rebellion and fear, right? And then a bigger fear than that is, what if this does work? Then what? What if this does work, Mike? Then what? You don't want to be no square, man. Especially telling another man your secrets, man. And see, one of the biggest things that had happened to me is that you guys were the first people in my life to ever tell me, keep coming back. Right? Because where I came from, they were telling me, don't come back. Right? Don't show up no more. Don't call no more. Son, don't come over here no more. You know? They were telling me stuff like that before I came to Narcotics Anonymous. They were telling me that for years, man, since the mid-90s, man, early 90s. They were telling me, don't come back over here no more. You know? You don't got no place over here no more. You know? And so you guys showed me the love and acceptance that I've been looking for, man. So it was hard for me to get out my secrets. Look, man, no one in my home group was talking about tricking. Right? Before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, all I had ever done was prison time and gang activity and sell drugs and all that. That was the extent of my life, man. I didn't have no high school diploma, GED. I'd never worked. My hands are softer than most women's hands in Texas, right? I didn't have no trade. I didn't know nothing, man. All I knew was time and how to beg, man, and how to leech. That's all I knew before I got here, you know? And I used to leech off women out there when I would use, man. I'd get out and find whoever was running around on the boulevard, and I would leech to them. Man, I'm a big guy, so they felt safe with me. Right? So no one's sharing at the home group, so my recovery was start at 8 and end at 9. You know what I'm talking about? Right? Where I hit the door at 9 p.m. and I'm reduced to the animal level again, not knowing what I'm suffering from. Right? And in step one, in the step working guides, and it's on page one. It says, "What makes us addicts is the disease of addiction, not the drugs, not our behavior, but our disease. There is something within us that makes us unable to control our use of drugs. This same something also makes us prone to obsession and compulsion in other areas of our lives." Then it tells, "How can we tell when our disease is active?" Right? I didn't know what I was suffering from, so I couldn't address it. And plus, I didn't want you guys to judge me, man. You guys were hugging on me. You guys were telling me we're proud of you, Mike. You know, keep coming back, Mike. Keep it going, Mike. This guy used to say, you're in the miracle machine, Mike. And I'm like, what's that even mean, right? He's like, you don't even know. He's like, I don't even want to spoil it for you. You don't know what you've embarked on, right? And I'm like, well, because look, I didn't have a house car. I was an equal opportunity hater, right? And I used to tell Tony, Tony P, man, I'd be like, why do they? Because in Abilene, you got there's people that go to the oil field, you know, they go to the windmill farm. They're coming, they're coming buku monies and stuff to the home group, all dressed all nice and shit. You know, I'm nickel and diamond and still working at the cattle auction to pay my rent at the recovery house and stuff like that. And I used to tell Tony P. Ryan, I would tell him, man, like, when's it gonna be my turn, Mike? I mean, Tony, and I remember Tony P telling me, Mike, can they show you what they don't have? I was like, what, another fucking riddle? Here we go, you know. And I was like, explain to me. So can they show you in here, Mike? Right? Can they show you what's going on in here? That's what they need to share with you. What's going on in here, you know? And so since everybody was loving on me and telling me they didn't want to beat me up or kill me or anything, it was hard for me to express with my sponsor what was going on at 9 p.m., right? And eventually, them defects backed me into a corner that I didn't come out of clean. You know, I got to Narcotics Anonymous September 18 of 2005, and I went back out in 2008. Now, this time, right, I got a clean date of August 8th of 2008, right? And this time was different, man. I wanted something different, you know, because I had built everything up. I built the outside up real good, man. I got my custom. I've had everything I've had in my life has been since I got to Narcotics Anonymous, man. So you're looking at a bum that crawled out from under a shooting gallery and got clean, man. You know, and everything. My kids, both my kids have been in Narcotics Anonymous. I've had them, they're raised in conventions and the rooms and all that. One's 16, going to be 16 this month, and one's going to be 9 or 10, right? And all the jobs and all the little accolades. Someone earlier was saying they got the little letters behind their name. I got some of those too, right? I went and got my GED and all that good stuff. But I had to start this process over again. I had to start trusting one man with the whole man, right? And so in the fifth step, it addresses some of these secrets, right? And But it says, addicts tend to live secret lives. For many years, we covered low self-esteem by hiding behind phony images that we hope would fool people. Unfortunately, we fooled ourselves more than anyone, right? Then it goes on to say, although we often appeared attractive and confident on the outside, we were really hiding shaky, insecure we were really hiding a shaky, insecure person on the inside. The masks have to go. Could Mike get rid of the mask, right? You guys have kept telling me, man, you got to get honest in here, Mike. Honesty is the antidote to our diseased thinking, right? When I think of the first step, I think of honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, acceptance, and humility. Can I get what the first step was going on, right? Could I tell my sponsor what was really going on, right? Could I tell him the real secrets, you know? Could I tell him the grimy stuff, the stuff I was embarrassed of? Could I tell him I was embarrassed of my dad for all them years? Could I tell him that my dad never played fucking ball with me and all that? That I had to learn everything on my own? Could I tell him that, man? Could I tell him the even more embarrassing stuff, that my mom would go to every prison and smuggle fucking heroin inside, man? She visited me in every fucking California prison. Can I get with that? Right? I want to give you the level stuff, man. I just want to give you, yeah, I robbed so-and-so, and so-and-so shot me, you know. But I couldn't get down to the real core, man. Right? I couldn't get down to really how I felt, you know, until my second sponsor. And so we have a whole fucking section on secrets. Right? Yeah. Step four, man. You ever notice step four, the spiritual principles, is like not in the back? It's not the last section. It's in the front, man. You know why? Because they already know we're going to deal with some fucking heavy-duty fucking shit, man. Right? It is. It's right here. It's right after an inventory of ourselves, the spiritual principles. And every other step, it's in the back before moving on. Right? Because God knows, man. That's why in step four, and I told you earlier, it says we're going to need all these principles for step one, two, and three. And working step four in Narcotics Anonymous, it tells us to kind of revisit step one, two, and three, right? So we can get the spiritual momentum and get into four, you know? And so I think of secrets, I think of defects. And what does the literature say? Defects die they grow in the dark and die in the light of exposure, right? So when my defects are growing in the dark, and I didn't let them die in the light of exposure, man. I couldn't get what was going on. I didn't want nobody to suspend my membership in Narcotics Anonymous, man. So the second to the last question, are there any secrets that I haven't written about yet? Right? What are they? And those are the secrets that I can share freely now, man. I'm free today. Right? I've experienced a higher point of freedom. I've experienced true joy and happiness and freedom in Narcotics Anonymous, the NA way. You know? I couldn't share that before. I couldn't share that I was embarrassed of my dad and used to find his syringes and spoons everywhere. I couldn't share that with nobody, man. I couldn't share that as a little kid. I'd bring friends over and my dad was so high that they were saying, "What's wrong with your dad?" And never brought him over again. You know? I couldn't share that stuff. I couldn't share that my mom had smuggled heroin inside the prison to me, man. And visited me at every fucking prison in California I was in. I couldn't share that to people. You know, I couldn't share that my mom almost got shot when they shot up our house. I couldn't share that stuff, man. You know? I couldn't share playing house with my cousins, man. This is how warped I was. I thought I was a lucky little boy. It didn't hit me till years later when I see my daughter, and she was the same age as we were when we started playing house, me and my cousin and her friend, and then it hit me, like, who taught my cousins that? There was a deep sadness. I've never looked at it as abuse, but it was, and I was able to write it down, man. I was able to get free of that, right? And I was able to get a deeper understanding rather than be understood. You know, and it just hurt my heart thinking of who showed my cousin and her friend that. You know, I was able to get free of that, man. I was able to get free of the times I've been shot, the times I overdosed and they just dumped my fucking body and somebody else found me. Right? You know? It says, before we finish this fourth step, we should stop and reflect. Is there anything we've missed, either intentionally or not? Is there something we think is so bad that we just can't possibly include in our inventory? If so, we should be reassured that the fact that a multitude of NA members have worked this step, and there has never yet been a situation in anyone's fourth step that was so unique that we had to create a new term to describe it. Keeping secrets is threatening to our recovery. As long as we are keeping a secret, we are actually building a reservation in our program. It ain't no wonder I got high. I was full of secrets, man. You know? My sponsor now, check it out, man. I've had some secrets since in recovery. You know, I've cheated in a relationship. I got a sponsee going through that right now. And I was like, man, it's going to be okay. We just don't fucking use no matter what. And we don't do that no more. You know? Did I almost get high? Yeah, I know. I remember because I spent so much fucking energy lying about it, man. I made the whole home group think she was crazy. She was, but I sucked too. Low self-esteem, man. I couldn't just break it off. I didn't know how to tell someone. You know how it is when you get together and then the whole fucking hungry. Yeah, you guys are so bad. You know, like, I didn't even like myself. Why? How the fuck was I supposed to like her? You know? And instead of being a man about it, I didn't know how to be like, hey, I don't want to be with you no more, man. You know? And so, you know how it is in the neighborhood. How do you end one relationship? You start another one. You know, I was unequipped, man. And I remember calling Jake and crying. And he's all, come over to the house. And I get there. And he thought I fucking used, right? I was close, man. I was fucking close to blowing it, you know. And I just got free. I remember it was just freeing, man. You know, and ever since then, of course, that stigma follows me, you know, like, oh, he's the NA cheater dude, you know. You know, people that never weren't even around. I'm like, I told one person, you were still playing with fucking Barbies when that shit happened, you know, like, I don't know, you know. I tell people, I don't cheat for your sake. I don't cheat for my sake, because I know what that almost blew it all, man. You know, so I went in there and I let him have it. I told him, man, I remember he's just like, just tell me, mijo, just tell me. And I was like, fuck, I cheated. He said, well, fuck, why didn't you tell me? And now I have the story straight. He's I've been throwing you under the bus with everybody else, but I didn't even know if it was true or not. You know, I was like, well, it's true, man. You know, he said, well, now we got to do something different. He said, what do you want to do? You know, and I said, well, I just want to stop everything. One thing about Narcotics Anonymous, what you told me, at any given time, I could step away from whatever's going on. I don't got to go through the whole thing, right? I don't. At any given time, I can step back, allow you guys to love me, allow you in, you know. Like on day one, when I allowed you in, I detoxed on 8808. It started in the rooms. I made a meeting a day for 90 days. Every day, I was wanting to throw up. I didn't want nobody to touch me, all that. But I was in here. You know why? Because I knew this is the most powerful vehicle for carrying the message, right? The synergy, the God. You know what I know about God? I don't care who your God is, man. One thing I know about all the gods, they send all their addicts to Narcotics Anonymous to figure it out, right? And allow us to love each other, to show each other how to live. That's what I know. You know, that's how powerful this program is, right? We've heard it all weekend. It has the power. We're living proof. Look at us. Look at us. For real, we're living proof, man. I got a life that I don't even recognize. I got a life I didn't even want. I didn't want that. I'm living my best life. No, I'm living somebody else's best life. This lady at my home group, she said, Mike, it's going to get good. It's going to get bad. It's going to get weird. It's going to get strange. It's going to get real. And then it's going to get different. And then one day it's going to be real different. Right? And today, like, it's real fucking different, right? On a daily basis, I still allow you guys to breathe life into me, no matter what's going on, you know. On a daily basis, I'm still available for the contact process, right? For carrying the message, I still participate in all that. I still say no when I want to say yeah. You know, that's the real secret there. Can I say no when I want to say yeah? Right? And it's not as bad as you know, I always tell people there's a lot of illegal and hood rat stuff always going on in here at all times, right? I just got to say no when I want to say yeah to that stuff, you know? Like, is it going to be conducive to recovery? Am I hurting anybody? Am I going to hurt myself most of all, right? Am I being an acid in someone's life? I've learned that. If I can't be an acid in someone's an acid in somebody's life, I need to remove myself, right? And work on Mike, you know. If I'm being a liability in somebody's life, I gotta remove myself, you know. I can't keep going. If it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's probably a duck, you know. And usually that's me, and no one has to stand around for me to quack again, you know. I know that, and vice versa, you know. If it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, I don't got to stick around for it to quack again. I can remove myself and allow people in my life, telling myself, telling the disease of addiction, hey, this is how I feel, this is what I feel like doing, you know. It's been a while because I got free of that stuff, you know. I hated my dad, man. And I was able to lead my dad to his next phase of life almost 2 years ago. In 2020, my parents passed away like 30 days apart from each other. One 10-10 and the other one 11-11, you know. And I was there, man. It's crazy. You know, 20 years ago, it wouldn't have been me. I would have found out, you know, some other way. You know, someone would have been like, hey, Mike, your parents passed, you know. But I was there, man. You know, I was able to, and it wasn't nothing ugly. It was beautiful, man. My dad, in that last month, he told me he loved me more than ever in my life, ever. And I'll go out with all that, right? I was able to see my dad's living amends with my daughters. He was there for them, man. And one day it hit me. I was in Chino when he did his nine-step amends, man. He came to visit me. And years later, I get to feel it. Not see it, but feel it. Right? In 98, I heard it from him. Right? Years later with my daughters, and I remember just feeling serenity, man, serene. And I remember just being able to thank God for the moment. You know, like, thank you for the moment, God. Like, thank you for allowing me to see this and feel this, right? And it was gone, man. Any little shame, guilt, secret, resentment that I had was totally gone, man. You know? I don't got to live that way anymore. That's the best thing you guys taught me, man. I don't ever have to live that way no more, man. But I want to thank you guys for asking us to come out and share, man. And I love you guys. That's all I got.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you. Excellent. Thank you.